This next bit is a few seconds of Bill O'Reilly when he was on Bill Maher's show a week or two back. And he's spinning this thing, well, as you expect he would, and if you're listening to this, you're probably not a fan of Bill O'Reilly. But he's going to tell you something, and then I'm going to explain a little bit about it, but it just kills me. And nobody, I have not heard one person call a Republican on this since the Schiavo bullshit happened. Not one person has called them on this, and I guess we came to the right place, because goddammit, I'm going to call him on it. Bill Maher asked O'Reilly if he didn't think it was shameful and horrible the way Bush and DeLay and Santorum and Frist and all these other religiously insane super monkeys got up there and used this poor woman's lifeless body as a political tool to try to beat up the Democrats. Of course, the Democrats were so disengaged, they weren't even in this fight. But here's how it went on Bill Maher's show.
I thought the whole thing was a circus, you know, and what I saw was a bunch of people demagoguing it from both sides. They were all demagoguing the issue, all of them. So if you want to pick sides, go right ahead.
If you want to pick sides, go ahead. Well, gee, Bill, I think I will. This has been the biggest lie we've heard probably in the last 30 days, how both sides use the Schiavo family as a political tool. And it's just not true. It's a little bit like saying, say you're a waitress at a Denny's, and there's two old women sitting there in a booth, two blue-haired women in their 70s are sitting there in a booth having lunch. And bikers come in, they come in with their Harleys, and I'm not getting down on the bikers, I'm just saying. A couple of six-foot bikers come in, and they want to sit where the old ladies are sitting. So they tell the old ladies to get the hell up, and the ladies say, "Excuse me, son, we're having a conversation." The bikers grab the two women and start slapping them around. So someone calls the police, and the police show up, and the police ask the waitress what happened, and she says, "Well, they were all fighting." Well, no, they weren't all fighting. One was clearly sitting there minding their own damn business, and the other guys jumped up and set their hair on fire, started screaming, and caused a big engagement that made someone call the police. That's what we have with the Schiavo deal. This wasn't all sides, pick your side, getting in on this. This is the Republicans went fuck crazy trying to get some political hay off this poor, mostly dead woman. And because Jesse Jackson had to stick his big-ass nose right in the center of this, that gave the whores and liars a little bit of cover to talk about all sides. Now, if Jesse Jackson would have stayed the hell out of us, if he could have resisted the spotlight just this one time, we would have been absolutely pure. But no, Jesse had to just run right into it and start, "Me, me, me, look at me, I need the spotlight, everybody look at me," and he made a big spectacle that enabled to some small degree, maybe 10 or 20%, for the Republicans to say both sides were in it. If Jesse Jackson had a brain, he would have stayed the hell out of this, and this would have been 100% entirely a Republican Machiavellian piece of crap that all went wrong, and everything they touched would have turned to crap, and it would have been 100% the Republicans' fault. But no, Jesse, thanks to you, you allowed them to spread the blame all over the Democrats, you idiot. Now, you know, you people know I'm mostly on Jesse's side, but when a guy screws up a 10 on the scale, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. He just fucked this up as big as he could have, but that doesn't excuse O'Reilly. O'Reilly talked about both sides did it. Well, yeah, one guy on our side did it, and all the Republicans, you know, the Senate, the House, Santorum, Frist, DeLay, the President, everybody had to make a big thing out of this. Jeb was involved big time, too. They all had to make a big spectacle out of this, and they got caught. Karl Rove was wrong this time. Go figure. But they got caught. And for O'Reilly to sit there and say both sides demagogued it, well, we expect O'Reilly to lie like a stupid whore, because that's what he is. He's being paid to lie. He's being paid to give the White House spin on this. So that's what they're doing. They're pretending it all. Yeah, you can say the bikers and the old ladies were both involved in the fight, but we all know that the old ladies were sitting there minding their damn business, and the bikers came in and started a big row. And that's what happened. And so for the waitress to say, "Gee, officer, I'm not sure. Those old ladies and the bikers were fighting." Well, yeah, that's about how fair this rap is on the Democrats that they were involved too. But thanks to Jesse, he gave them a lot of political cover. Way to go, Jesse. What is wrong with you? Jesse, you've been in politics longer than I have. How can you be that stupid? How is it possible for you to be that stupid? And even if you felt there was some overarching, monstrously huge principle that you just had to stand up for, well, when the Republicans are screwing themselves, the biggest instance in the last couple of years, and then you ran in and saved them, Jesse. You probably cost a lot of people their lives, Jesse. That act, you probably killed a lot of people, Jesse. Now think about it. By empowering Bush, by giving them an excuse, by lessening the damage done to them, now it's going to be a lot easier for them to go into Iran or go into Syria, some of that. You gave Bush a whole lot of political capital, Jesse. That was a crime. That was a sin. If you'd mind your own goddamn business, then Bush and the Republicans and DeLay and Santorum and Frist and all those bastards, they would have had this completely, totally on themselves. But Jesse ran in to save them. Way to go, Jesse. You fucked this one up, buddy. You fucked it up big time major. But still, for O'Reilly to claim both sides were doing it, yeah, just remember that waitress with the old ladies and the bikers. That's the truth. And Jesse, next time, would you stay the hell out of it? Can you resist the spotlight just one time, Jesse? We're not saying forever. We're not saying sew your mouth shut. We're saying just one time. Shut the hell up and stay out of things. I need to ask your indulgence on this next bit. It's about Tiger Eldrick Woods. And I recorded it when I was real mad. And what happened is I spent 5 or 6 hours last Sunday watching that damn golf tournament. And every time Tiger was getting ready to either tee off or putt, I got my headphones on and I'm going, hex on thee, and I had it working real good, you know. Tiger had a really bad, whatever, Thursday, Friday, and then something, he did some, I guess Saturday, whatever, Sunday morning he woke up and had some miracle round, and then he was in the run, and then he was falling behind, and then, but I was putting the big hex on him, and everything was working good, but he started to weasel out of it, so I lost a whole segment of the radio show. I lost an entire fourth of today's show. Oh, it was good too, but no, can't use it now. He squeaked out a victory, one stroke, beating the immortal Chris DeMarco, the second greatest golfer of all time. But anyway, since I had an entire segment dedicated to it, I couldn't just throw it all away, so I just ended up taking out my frustrations on you. If you love Tiger Woods, if you don't want to hear me mad, just fast forward through this part. Oh, but it pissed me off. Well, we've got some really, really shocking sports news. This is going to be hard for you to believe, but I swear to Koresh, this is absolutely true. Brace yourselves, as the vulgar pig boy said when he announced that Hillary had murdered Vince Foster. You ready for this? Tiger Woods, also known as Eldrick, won a major tournament. I am not kidding. Repeat. Tiger Woods, after 3 long years, won a major tournament. No one believes it, not even him. And he managed to squeak by. First of all, he tied with the great and immortal Chris DeMarco after 72 holes, so they had to play a sudden death, whatever it's called, and he squeaked out a one-stroke victory over the immortal Chris DeMarco, which by extension means he's the second greatest golfer of all time, Chris DeMarco. I mean, it stands to figure if Tiger is one stroke better than DeMarco, and Tiger is the greatest of all times, that means DeMarco's right behind him. And you talk about a fraud. We've been through it before, so we're not going through the whole thing again. But Tiger is once again ranked the greatest player in the world. And even though he couldn't win a major tournament the last 3 years, because the PGA is a whore organization, they named him the greatest player. He's number one, ranked number one in the world, even though this is his first major in 3 long years. Got something else to say. That miracle shot, unquote, on the 16th. No way he did that on purpose. Don't you dare act like he can do that. And the proof is in the pudding. If he could do that, if he had any clue in 10,000 that ball was... I mean, I could get on a golf course and hit a hole-in-one. Does that mean I'm the greatest golfer of all time? No, it means dumbass got lucky. And that's what happened to Tiger Woods. If you didn't see it, oh, it looked like a miracle, all right. The green, whatever, the putting green, it was all tilted funny. And Tiger, once again, was way the hell off in some damn sand trap behind a tree like he always is. But somehow he hit a ball and it went way, way, way left of the hole. He's looking straight at the hole, but he hit it way to the left. And when it landed, it kind of did a little low English back up, and then it drifted down to the right and fell in a cup. And he let out a whoop like he did it on purpose. I mean, you got to admire a guy that can make a shot like that and keep a straight face, you know. Back when I was a major pool hustler, I could do it too. I could make some crazy-ass shot. And if the ball somehow went in, you know, there's a trick. You keep that straight face like you meant to do it. You never let your opponent know that it was, you know, a one in a trillion. But don't act like Tiger could do that if he wanted to ever again in his whole life. Because if he could, if he was 2% of that good, then why didn't he do it on the other 72 holes? It's just as obvious as it can be. If Tiger had any clue at all that he could hit a ball with that kind of precision, then he would do it all the time. And he would hit either a two or a three on every hole that he ever shot. But it doesn't work that way because Tiger's not that good. He is a golfer. It reminds me a lot of this American Idol. See, when they make Tiger, when they vote him the number one player on the planet, that is the biggest hand job you ever saw. But it reminds me of American Idol. American Idol, they act like those people can sing. But they can't sing, but it's just with Fox again and again and again and again telling you, oh, he's the American Idol, she's the American Idol, the greatest singer, the greatest performer, the greatest talent ever known to man. And those people can't even sing on key. They can't do it at all. This current crop, I don't know if I've ever seen a complete show, but none of those people, and I've got to give credit to the three judges, they say about half the time, well, boy, if you could find a key, you know, if you had any clue where your voice was going and you could find that key and somehow hold it, the song would have sounded better. At least the judges on Idol could be kind of honest. But and the proof in the pudding with the Idol people is besides that one, since you've been gone, Kelly Clarkson's got out now, none of them have ever had anything close to a hit. That Ruben fella and that Justin fella and Clay Aiken and the others, you know, you can all pretend that those are music stars. But until they get a hit album, or like I said, Kelly Clarkson's got one song. I guess there's been four of them or so, and that one deal with Clay and the big black fella, Ruben maybe is his name, somehow one of them came in first and the other one came in second. Everyone thought they got robbed, so they kind of came up with co-champions. But none of them, besides Kelly Clarkson, they can't have a hit record. They're not in show business. Fox tells you they're in show business. And that's crazy because even NBC fell for it. I meant to say something at the time, but NBC had a Christmas special with one of those losers on it. And it was show number 97 for the week. But you don't become a star by calling yourself a star. And that's what Fox has done, and that's what these golf people have done. They decided that Tiger Woods is a great golfer. So they rank him number one, even though he can't win. Well, I'm sorry. Like George Bush, he eventually, as the years went by, he eventually won one, maybe, probably, sort of. But, oh, please. And there's a big, giant picture of Tiger on the front page of the USA Today Monday. He's got this big heroic, I did it, like he climbed Mount Everest blindfolded with his hands cuffed behind his back. Oh, please. That shot he made on 16 was horse hockey. You know it and I know it. But golf, it's hard to believe it's not a short pants sport, as sucky as it is. I'm pretty sure golf is for rich people, Republicans, and racists, and sexists. On that sucky shot on 16, oh, please. If anybody writes to me and says, Bart, he meant to do that, I will drive to your home and slap you. There is no chance in 100,000 that he meant to do that, because if he did, why don't he do it the next 72 holes in a row when he plays? But no. Half the time he's in a bunker, behind a tree, underneath a rock. He has no control over that ball. He got lucky on 16.
He rode a blazing saddle. Wore a shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far. He conquered Out of the sun rode a man with a gun, and Bart was his name. Yes, Bart was his name. He rode a blazing saddle.
I think I may have something figured out. There has to be a reason why the church and the bishops are so reluctant to sign Zero Tolerance Pledge against raping young little boys. And it makes you wonder, what could possibly be their position? Why would they refuse to do that? What could possibly cause a bunch of bishops to get together and say, we refuse to sign the No Rape Pledge? But I figured it out. They're waiting for someone to come to them with a contract. And one of the exclusions in the contract is that all past deeds are forgiven. That's what they're looking for. They're looking for the right to not talk about, like Mark McGuire, they want to talk about the future. If you want to talk about the future, they'll sign a pledge. If you want to talk about the past, that's not going to work because we don't know how many are guilty. Is it 5%? Is it 25%? Before you think I'm just pulling numbers out of the air, it would appear that the percentage of priests who have something to lose, in other words, will be bounced out if the truth comes out, apparently that percentage is crippling to the church. If it was 2%, 3%, they could cut loose the 2 or 3% of the priests that were involved sexually with parishioners, let's put it that way. They could live with 97%, but they can't get by with 60%. They can't get by with half. They can't get by with 70%. I mean, I don't know the numbers, but obviously they could lose 3% of the priests, but if they lost 40% of the priests, the church would crumble. They would be combining parishes like crazy. The church would be 35 miles away for everybody. The Catholic, you know, real estate prices would drop like crazy. Those giant buildings are now yours for $80,000. The church is stuck. They can't cut off 40% of their force. The only way they can get out of this is to say, let's make a deal, let's look forward, let's not talk about the past. And see, they can't really do that because what if little Billy's parents file a lawsuit next month? How are they going to rule that all the priests are held harmless from previous sex crimes? They can't really do that. But that's what the bishops and the priests and the cardinals, they're all looking for that. They're looking for some kind of angle, some kind of line in the contract that gets them off the hook. Because they'll sign a from now on pledge. They can't sign a what have I done pledge. I recently had one of my great ideas, and when I have a great idea, it's usually just the bee's knees. It is such a good idea. Everybody will like this idea, and when I'm done, I'm going to ask you to contact your local authorities and tell them about my idea. We need to get this in all 50 states because it's that good. And here's the big idea. License plates should be words instead of some wacko mixture of letters and numbers. Now, say you're on the front porch, rocking on your little rocking chair there, perhaps enjoying a pipe load of hemp, and playing the harmonica like Abe Lincoln used to do. And while you're sitting there minding your own business, bothering nobody, you hear a commotion, and it turns out the little girl two doors down is being kidnapped. She's being kidnapped, pulled right out of her bedroom window, and this fella's grabbing this old 9-year-old girl, and she's kicking and screaming and yelling, and he drags her into his van. And now you try to help the police, you're trying to be a good citizen, and you look at the van's license plate number, you make a little mental note, you know, it's a blue Ford with a dent on the right side. And you try to get the guy's license plate so they can track him down, and turns out his license plate is IDG 279. And so you're trying to remember that IDG, or was it DIG, or was it, could have been IDO. You know, it could have been a lot of things. I mean, who the hell can remember a license number? But what instead of a jumbled mix of nonsense letters and numbers, what if it was a word? What if the guy's license number was something like Summer 42? Now, see, that's pretty easy to remember. What if his license plate was Light 65? What if his license plate was Winter 202? Now see, you can remember that for 25 years. But you try to remember IDE or IDG or DIG or IEG or whatever it was, and then was it 279 or 297 or, you know, who knows. But the hope, what is the point of a license plate? The point of a license plate is to identify. And unless you have a pencil and a paper and a sharp eye and a decent memory, you're not going to remember a license plate. Sure, if you got a pencil and a paper in your hand and you look at the license plate and you look at your pencil and paper and you look at the license plate and you write it down and you hold it up, you got your the little thing you wrote down and you look at the license plate, if you got all that time in the world, sure, now it might do you some good. But who's got that kind of time? What kind of kidnapper is going to sit there and let you write down his license number? He's not going to do it. He's going to jump in that car and disappear. But if his license plate was Cookie 7, or if his license plate was Bingo 19. Now think, you couldn't forget Bingo 19 if they hypnotize you. So this is a good idea. All 50 states, the DMVs should be notified. So I'm telling you what you need to do if you want to be a good citizen, if you want to catch more kidnappers, thinking there's not just the kidnappers. Granted, it's a wild scenario, but you got your hit-and-run drivers. You got, if there's just burglaries in the area, and you saw a pickup, and you don't remember much about the pickup, but you remember it had Funny 04 as a license plate. Now, everybody remembers Funny 04. So, if the purpose of the license plate is to identify, and I believe it is, then why not make it something that you can remember? It's common sense. How could Tequila Boy in Oklahoma be the first person to come up with such a logical, common sense idea that would cut the police work in half? Think about how many times on Law and Order did Lenny go up to someone and say, "I don't suppose you got a license plate," and they'd say, "Well, no, but there was a fish on the side of the van." I watched the scene many times on Law and Order. They say, "Well, great. So we're looking for a blue Ford van with a dent in the side, and there's 600 body shops in the greater New York area or within a 20-mile radius." So, if you could just convince somebody, if you can convince your local DMV, maybe make that a campaign issue, a candidate for governor or a big city mayor or something, if you want to run on the Law and Order ticket, push this idea through. If there's a license plate you can remember, you will catch 10 times the suspects. Of course, it won't prove they're guilty, but if you want to talk to someone in a van, if you can remember that his license plate was Ceiling 44, everybody can remember Ceiling 44. So, contact your local people, tell them old Bart has this great idea, this is going to save lives, this is going to bring kidnapped kids home. Anytime the cops want to track somebody down now, it would be so easy if you had a license plate that somebody could remember.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on here? I had you people try to get a little track lead, not to jump around like a bunch of Kansas City faggots.
Sorry, Mr. Tate, I guess we kind of got caught up.
Listen, dummy, the surveyors say they may have run into some quicksand up ahead. Better check it out.
Okay, I'll send down a team of horses to check out the ground.
Horses? Why, we can't afford to lose no horses, you dummy. Send over a couple of niggers.
Okay, Mr. Tate. You and you.
Sir. Sir, he specifically requested two niggers. Well, to tell a family secret, my grandmother was Dutch.
I knew your grandma was Dutch.
I always think it's fun to use the words and tactics of the Nazi bastards against them. So here's a little Dennis Miller for you.
What else happened this week? The jury of Paul Hill, the man who was found guilty of killing an abortion doctor, has recommended that he be sent to the Florida electric chair. The jury took 20 minutes to convict Hill. Foreman said they would have been done sooner, but they needed the extra 18 minutes to qualify for their per diem. Charlton Heston's autobiography, will be coming out soon. The actor's having trouble coming up with a title, so he's offering $1,000 to anybody who can name his book. Let's see, how's about Gun-Toting Hack with a Bad Rug? How's that, Chuck? Huh? Should make that check out to Dennis Miller? Care of Dennis Miller live. Okay, Moses? Clarence Thomas continues to deny that he is out of touch with his black heritage, although when asked if he had seen the movie X, Thomas replied, "It's hard to remember every movie I've seen has an X on it." Don't these radical religious right leaders scare you just a little? And I'm not talking about good, simple religious folk here. I'm talking about the overzealous ones. Let's run down our roster of modern-day Pharisees. Jerry Falwell, with his big hillbilly grin, concealing his hatred for you and the fun you can have with your nasty little genitals. Then we've got Pat Robertson, the Dixon of Charlotte. Falwell pretends he held counsel with God, saw Jesus, and has it on good authority from the Holy Ghost. The Cuber has an arsenal of nuclear weapons aimed at the United States. Now we've got our good friend Ollie North, who quivers with religious fervor while conveniently forgetting he was a belligerent liar who abused the authority of a position. You know, I have no doubt that God will forgive Lieutenant Colonel North one day. I just don't think our court should have. These modern-day Torquemadas can't wait to seize the reins and begin straightening out the non-believers. And I'm sorry, but you just don't go shooting doctors. If a judgment call is to be made, God gets to make it. Not you, him. Somebody else's abortion is none of your business. And listen, if you really believe that your God is telling you to kill an abortionist in his name, then you got to crush some tinfoil on your antenna, pal. One of the definitive tenets of Christianity is tolerance. Trust me, there's no version of the Bible that says love thy neighbor unless he's a Peter Allen fan. Any? What he can't understand is turning on someone because you don't happen to agree with their sexual preference. Forget your linear biblical interpretation that tells you to ostracize gays and follow your heart. It's like when your driving test instructor would tell you to run the stop sign, and you would, and then he'd flunk you, and you'd say, "But you told me to." And he'd say, "Sorry, you never run a stop sign." And you never carpet bomb a group of people with hate because they're different from you. Case closed, all right? Look, I realize this is America. Everybody has the right to organize. The Democratic Party should try it sometimes. But you know something? The members of the radical religious right have to get it through their skulls. Separation of church and state. Separate, not together, apart. The founding fathers set it up like that because back home in merry old England, they witnessed scenes of theocratic horror that would have made Quentin Tarantino puke. I can only hope the radical right's grab for political power this November will be their holy Waterloo. I know we don't like to vote, but the less we involve ourselves in the political process, the more special interest groups and fanatics move in. So vote. And remember this when you're alone in the booth with your just you and your lever. The radical right believes the word right does not simply denote their placement on the political spectrum, but also their sanctimoniously smug assertion that right is exactly what they are on any and all issues.
And the minute those planes hit the towers, the sanctimonious little prick decided he was going to dedicate the rest of his life to the greatness of George Bush and the rightness of Nazi fascism. Way to go, Dennis. What kind of conviction does a man have where he can run into something and flip a switch and reverse everything he's ever thought of to the age of, what are you, 50? So now you're dedicating the rest of your life and you've thrown your career away. Dennis, how are you going to raise your kids? Are you going to grow those kids up to be Bush fans too? Teach them to hate blacks and gays?
Psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
You're psychosomatic.
That boy needs therapy.
You're lying down on the couch.
Well, what does that mean?
You're a nut. You're crazy in the coconut.
What does that mean?
That boy needs therapy.
I'm gonna kill you.
That boy needs therapy.
Granny Gazoo, let's have a chief. I want to count three.
That boy needs therapy.
He was white as a sheep.
And he also made false teeth.